Why doesn't anything work anymore? The government, corporations, the schools, and even the church. Why aren't my prayers answered? Why is there so much violence? Is there anything I can do when I'm afraid and powerless? What is God doing anyway? Noted biblical scholar Walter Wink's 30 years of work and 3 books on what the Bible calls the principalities and the powers address these questions. And the most helpful and hopeful message is that the whole world was created good, including institutions and systems, and they belong to God, just like we do. They often lose their way, just like we do, but they can be transformed, just like we can, and we can help it happen. Now we're going to watch as Janet Wolfe, gifted inner-city pastor, and Jim Forbes, one of Newsweek's 10 best U.S. preachers, talk with Walter, for our benefit, about his work. Afterwards, we hope you'll continue the conversation. Institutions are impersonal, right? But sometimes they seem to have a life of their own. In fact, Walter, taking his cue from the Bible, says that every institution, the biblical powers, has at its heart a spirit, or using the biblical term, an angel. Now, that's not exactly the way a lot of people think about angels today, and it's not an easy concept for us to relate to. But what would it do to our expectation that institutions might change for the better, become life-giving, if we just imagined IBM and the government and our own churches and families each having at its heart a living entity created by God that has the potential for good as well as bad, just like we do?
I was trying to do a Bible study course with junior high kids in my parish in Texas. Right off the bat, I hit the letters to the 7 churches in Asia Minor, written second and third chapters of the book of Revelation. These letters are addressed not to the congregation, as Paul did, but to the angel of the churches. Each church had its own angel. And as I tried to understand what the angels of these churches meant, I began to recognize that there is in every church a spirit, or a spirituality, however you want to phrase that, a kind of a corporate personality that takes in the entire congregation, but is sort of the heart or core of that congregation's life. It's not just a personification, I felt. It was a real spirit. And as you go from church to church, you experience different kinds of spirits that are the uniqueness of that group of people. Like a hospital has an angel, and you can sense fairly quickly whether the hospital exists in its own mind to serve the patient, or whether it exists to serve the doctors, or nowadays to serve the HMO. And so that in trying to discern the angel of an institution, then we have a kind of piece, a leverage for understanding the interiority or the real core of what an institution is and is about. The angel carries the divine vocation of that congregation as well. So the angel not only is what everything in that congregation is and has become, but the angel still bears a sense of what that congregation ought to be, what it ought to be doing.
At the Riverside Church where I serve, there has always been, as you know, an angel on the north end of where the nave of the church is built. And people all around the community see that angel, and it has the trumpet, and it's been a symbol of Riverside's openness to the vision of God. Well, during last winter, when we had some very fierce storms in New York, I received a call from a member of the faculty saying that the angel had toppled over, and people started calling almost in panic, because in a sense they had a feeling that that angel was a sentinel of hope. But in your work on the powers, I understand that it is not enough for us to think about a contract or recast in bronze or whatever, the angel in a physical sense, that more important might be the angel of the church in terms of what its vocation is, what the sum total of our activities are, and what the various elements are that make that church a breathing institution.
Jim and I do a lot of workshops with congregations on the angel of their church, and have them toward the end draw a picture with crayons or pastels of the angel, and then write a letter from the the one like a son of man, the living Christ, to the angel of the church, because it's the angel is kind of stuck. It takes this outside force, as it were, the risen Christ, to come in and transform the situation. We spent a Saturday doing this workshop with the congregation, and almost all these groups were reporting what we feel like we need is more emphasis on spirituality, on spiritual growth. We feel we're hungry. We're not getting fed. The minister had been wanting for years to inaugurate a program in spirituality in the church, but didn't feel he had permission to do so. He didn't think that's what they wanted, because they never had done it before and nobody was talking about it. So suddenly there was this incredible revelation by this representative group of the congregation. This, in fact, is what the angel is calling us to do. And the minister, it was just like opening a huge door to him. And there was an instantaneous transformation. His sermon the next day was the best he'd ever preached in his life. And the church began to get on a completely new track.
I get the impression that this corporate personality can be sick. and that very negative things can happen because the angel is not always well. Now, my view was the angel was always a good, positive spirit come from God. Mm-hmm. But now I got a different notion. Is the angel not just always positive? And if the angel is sick, can the angel get well? You know? Yeah.
Well, in Jewish thought, the angels are about like us. I mean, they do good and they do bad. It's not until the Middle Ages, when Aristotle comes into the Catholic Church through Aquinas, that the angels all become good. But Scripture, you know, assumes that angels are a mix, and they can, in fact, fall away from what God's intention for them is.
In my present post, and I think I can talk about this now in public, I, as you know, was the first African-American senior minister at the Riverside Church. It felt to me that when I was called, the unanimity of the vote to have me come meant that the angel at the time of the search was saying, this is a church that is seeking to live above racial prejudice, seeking to live into a multicultural reality, a church that wants to be on the cutting edge of inclusiveness as Christ has commanded. And the angel seems to have seized the spirit of the search committee, and in spite of the fact that it had never been done before, here I came forth as a kind of expression of what the spirit of that church was supposed to be. Question. Is the angel ever capable of being visited by another dimension? Because once I was in place, I experienced that there was a spirit that says, look what we've gotten ourselves into. This is different. This requires some sacrifices. This requires some changes. You know, and even the question, is it going to be a white church? Can we maintain black and white and so forth? After about 4 years, there emerged a sense that the highest priority of the church was to promote a diversity that reflected the inclusion of all God's children in this congregation, black and white, gay and straight, high class, middle class, and other class. And that is where most of the energy of our church is coming from. Now, explain to me.
What if it was a misreading of the first angel? Like the angels in Revelations, they have this good part to them. And so there's a part that says, yes, we want to be made new. Yes, we are this broad and wonderful and diverse thing. But in the living of it out, I mean, the angels in Revelations, they know what they're to be about, and there's part of that in their identity. But in the living of it out, it gets complicated, and they don't like the conflict, and they don't like the messiness of the living it out. And so they become lukewarm instead of hot and cold, or they become embroiled in the conflict instead of living it out. So what if it was there all along as part of its identity? The angel has this good part. We know what God calls us to be. But we don't really want you to make us live it out, after all. I mean, we just want you to preach about it and say, yes, isn't that wonderful that we invited you, and isn't that enough? Mm-hmm. And the problem was you invited the angel to become more fully what God had created it to be, mm-hmm. and that's a whole other issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the idea of vocation, I think, is really critical to the understanding of these angels, because when a church or any other organization, for that matter, stops living out its divine vocation, stops doing what God called it to do, it becomes demonic.
Hmm.
See, in my understanding, I don't think they're demons and bad, you know, demons and good angels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the creation story, there's no story of the creation of the demons.
Mm-hmm.
Very important.
Mm-hmm.
The demons are all fallen angels. That is to say, something good that turns sour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a church, for example, when, you know, a church that's in the inner city, for example, the changing population, people, the whites going to the suburbs, blacks coming into the church, there's a moment of transition there. Now the church has got to discover its new vocation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and it's got to hear that from God. So when the church panics in this situation and says, no, survival is our vocation. Survival is the highest good.
Mm-hmm.
Or church growth is the highest good. Or any other goal than the one that God is specifically calling to, then that becomes a demonic angel.
I was the first woman anywhere around in any denomination to be a full-time pastor, and so there was enormous resistance. And I kept looking at the leadership of the church and trying to figure out, who is this, with whom I'm dealing? And it didn't make any sense. I mean, I could write down the names of the people, write down what their struggles were, write down what they were hoping for, and it still didn't add up. But when I found the book that said there is a larger peace. There is more than just adding up these few people. There's an identity that comes out of the collective. Was when it started to make sense and became more and more visible, so that things that seemed entirely mean-spirited or done out of anger in the identity of this angel became understood as coming out of fear. It was a part of the world where poverty had just wreaked havoc with most people's lives. Most people had farmed at one point. They lost all of their land or some of their land. The only work was in part-time factories with unpredictable layoffs. It was overwhelming, the things that had come into folks' lives. And so people were scared, and the church angel took on this fear, which meant that any change or conflict or new things was felt like it was awful, and it had to be silenced and it had to be done away with. For fear of what might happen. And where we saw this come out more powerfully was we kept trying to open things up then. If fear is what keeps us silent, how do we open it up? And at first, nobody wanted to acknowledge there's nothing, you know, that we're sad about. Everything's fine. We have no problems. We were studying Bible study, the lectionary text, Luke 13, the bent over woman. This in a county where the sheriff had been reelected 2 weeks after he'd beaten his wife in public. Enormous amount of abuse against women. So we're studying the bent over woman. What does this mean to hear Jesus say, stand up? Even when everybody else is unhappy, what does that mean? It was so powerful that we had to study it for 3 weeks through the lectionary passages off, because women, as well as men, but primarily women, kept saying, Jesus calls us to stand up. We don't have to wait for somebody else's permission. Even when these other powerful folks say, no, Jesus calls us to stand up. Well, right after we'd finished studying that, I got a call late at night, and it was from one particular woman who had been beaten, and everyone knew that her husband beat her fairly regularly. Her family was powerful, and she had always been instructed to stay inside the house until the wounds from her beatings had healed. This was a Saturday night. She had a number of stitches, bruises everywhere. And we talked for a long time and what this passage meant in the context of that, and believing that Jesus had called her name, stand up, stand up. And the next morning she came to church. In that congregation she came to church, and it had never happened before. She'd never been in public when she still had the bruises and the stitches were there left. And at first no one sat anywhere near her during the time of prayer, concerns, and celebrations. She simply stood up, tears running down her face, and at first she couldn't get anything out. And then finally she said, Jesus called my name also. Jesus calls my name. Also, and the whole notion of Jesus having called her daughter of Abraham. For a while there was silence, nobody moved, nobody said anything, and then her sister-in-law went over and embraced her. And it was a moment of transformation for the life of the congregation, because the angel who had been silenced by fear, so afraid that things would come out, that everything would come undone, had discovered instead that opening this stuff up becomes a source of healing and new possibilities for life.
I guess fear then must be really critical then to what makes a church abandon its vocation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in your church, for example, or at Riverside, the fear of the whites, that they were losing their kind of worship and that there was going to be some of this black singing and mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and some of this Pentecostal preaching mm-hmm. and so that they were going to lose control of their world.
Yes.
And that was a source of their own stability or their psychic stability. They needed the church not to change. It was their mm-hmm. fortress against the change that they were hitting, being hit with everywhere else. Right.
Also in a nation. It feels to me like nationally what we see in America today is a new sense that we are not sure what the future is going to hold. We are not sure whether we will be as prosperous in the days ahead. There is downsizing, job loss, new markets developing that maybe we will not control. Multinational energies are somehow subverting at times our own national interests. Maybe much of the meanness we speak about, the violence, the abuse, the intolerance, the actual lashing out at every institution that the nation has ever had as a source of strength, maybe we better not only look at the angel of our churches, mm-hmm. but the angel of our nation as well.
Let me put some biblical background on what you just said, because the Bible is very explicit that every nation has its own angel appointed by God, Deuteronomy 32:8. And then in Daniel 10, it talks about how the angel of Persia prevents an angel from God getting in and delivering a message to Daniel. So that there are these angels of nations, very much. There are angels of corporations, mm-hmm. Businesses, even small family businesses, of course, have their own angel. The fear in the marketplace has probably never been so high since the Depression. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there's this other effort that's going on to try to humanize these places. Instead of downsizing and just throwing everybody out, why don't we think about a four-day work week? What are some of the other alternatives we could be doing? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To just throwing people out on the street, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Job sharing,
and I think that's important, and we ought to be celebrating creative alternatives. But when you start looking at the larger spirit, I mean, not only sort of one company or another, and in this country dealing with capitalism, which by its very design dismisses whole chunks of our population, then you get kind of a limit on how far it's going to go in its vocation, because it has already agreed to this particular system, which sets the higher good on profit for few rather than the common good of the many. And so then in the midst of that, how do you begin to talk about change when you have not addressed this overall economic mm-hmm. definition and identity?
I've tried to figure out what's wrong with the angel of capitalism. Mm-hmm. And I think it is that I hear a lot about the invisible hand of the market that moves this capitalist machine along its mm-hmm. way. And I got to thinking that the angel of capitalism is either a one-armed angel or has a broken arm in the sling. And when the broken arm is in the sling, there is the absence of compassion, there is the absence of commitment to the well-being of everybody else. Is it possible that we could get the other hand uh-huh. of capitalism healed? Mm-hmm. But I would ask that about socialism as well,
sure.
because in every economic system that's got only one arm going and does not have the arm of compassion and care and looking at the corporate well-being, at the commonwealth, mm-hmm. becomes a defective system. Mm-hmm. And so insofar as I am interested in the angel of America, I'd have to see if the churches couldn't help the angel mm-hmm. of capitalism to say, yes, we want to make profit, but always in tandem to seeing to at least the survival necessities of all of the people who are a part of this body being attended to. Otherwise, that is a sick system. Mm-hmm. It is a sick angel presiding over a sick system.
Well, you know, Adam Smith himself, the so-called father of capitalism, or at least the articulator of it, denies that profit is the bottom line. The way most capitalists you've ever talked to mm-hmm. claim it, you know, profit is the bottom line. So everything has to be done in the name of profit, and profit constrains people and prevents them from being more humane. Mm-hmm. Adam Smith did not say that. He said profit is the means, not the end. Profit is the reward you get as a business person for serving the public welfare.
So the church becomes the one who says, you have forgotten who you are. You are, this is what in fact you are doing in our communities. Thousands of lives are impacted negatively because you have failed to remember what you're meant to be about.